Blistering insight, well-researched fact, insightful comment. I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place. But welcome, because this is none other than the world-famous Leicester City Pubcast. Hello everyone, welcome to the Cheltenham Town Pubcast, curiously also the home of the 2016 Premier League champions and 2021 FA Cup winners Leicester City, and of course the home of the Foss Arms with myself, Tim, with Norm. Good evening.
Good evening, Tim.
And Killer, good evening.
Good evening, Tim.
And Killer, on the subject of the Robins, we're obviously co-hosting this this pubcast these days with yep. Cheltenham. We've got very, very grave news, haven't we?
Yeah, and to be honest, this will be the last time it gets mentioned, of course, because as Norm and I, as we were cuddling up to each other on 39 minutes, as we often do during the game, the horrible realisation come over us that nearly 18 and a half hours of football without a goal had been broken by a not quite so prolific striker, Robert Street, who had, in sweeping the ball in the net, dented the hopes of two full buxom men, hoping that the Cheltenham Town goal drought would continue. A football team, it has to be said, it does get outscored by the Elephant Man. And it's, yes, I'm afraid, Cheltenham Town, and I'm sure for their army of relieved listeners, will now know that we will never be mentioned yet again. So congratulations to Cheltenham. The only good news, of course, Tim, was it was against Derby, who actually somehow unwittingly managed not to beat them.
Which is magic, Norman. We've got to just keep an eye on our local rivals, which we haven't been doing so much this season, but we need to make sure we're doing that, don't
certainly
we?
Certainly local. I don't know if they're rivals, but yeah.
Yeah, so go on then, Killer. Tell us, as you're on a roll, tell us a bit about a combination of Preston and Stoke, wherever you want to start. We had a double game week, of course, two more wins for the Flying Foxes, and we're starting to look unbeatable, more of which I will come on to later.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, lads. It feels like some weird dream I'm in, really, because, of course, when you go down, it's all very well. And I stood in a pub with a lot of Leicester City fans, and we were literally like, well, come on, and stick your necks out. What's going to happen? And to a man, we all said, I think we'll win it. But the key was, I think we'll win it. And obviously, when we played Stoke on Saturday, I'll talk about that in a second, we were playing against a team that not that long ago got relegated, not that long ago were favourites to come up, and now are absolutely hard and fast championship team going nowhere. Maybe the only place they're going is the third tier. It is not a foregone conclusion, however good you want to talk up the Leicester City squad. But just at the minute, I mean, we're just ripping it up. Two more home games, aggregate score of 5-0. Preston, for sure, was competitive up until our first goal, and then Leicester just kicked in, seemingly just got gears to spare. Against Stoke, they didn't really lay a glove on us at all. Good that we got the goal relatively early in the first half, which I think took the pressure off us. I couldn't possibly see them scoring. Went 2-0 up, and let's be honest, at 2-0 up, they would have got out of town at 2-0. They would have just turned around and said, yeah, okay, we're done. Can you leave us alone? Because they, again, didn't look like scoring, and we missed some gilt-edged chances. So it is absolutely fantastic what's going on at Leicester City. We will talk, obviously, about the team. Can it be better? Can it be improved? Should we be playing Iheanacho and Vardy up front together, given the fact that they pretty much scoring every game? But we're also sensible enough to know, gentlemen, that you don't ruin a good thing. And the record of 30 points, 11 games played, the best ever in the history of the Championship, 10 points clear of third place. Let's say that again. 10 points clear of third place in the first week of October. Tim, it's nothing short of phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I just want to come on. I've got a few thoughts on just how good this season could get. But Norm, before we do that, take us back to Preston a little bit, because I think, as Killer mentioned a minute ago, going into that game, that felt like the game of the season so far. I thought we would win it, and I thought if we did win it, then, you know, really, it's not all bets are off, but it was looking like that anyway. But they were a serious threat to us in principle if you looked at the Championship table, and it turned out to be, certainly after half time, just another stroll, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is what we're about at the moment. I was having a chat with Kira at the game about this, and we kind of agreed really that it never really feels like we're out of second gear. So whoever we're playing, it's the games are pretty similar. You know, we are controlling possession, we're passing the ball out really, you know, around really steadily. We look completely in control, and it's almost like we're never going to get to the point of scoring. But then, because they keep passing it around, they eventually they just pass it to such an extent that they've created a chance and it's buried. I mean, all our goals at the moment are, none of them are from 25 yards. We're just passing teams to death. You know, Killer alluded on Saturday. How many times do you see a striker, well, like basically with an open goal, tap him when the penalty area is really full? And that's exactly what Vardy had against Stoke. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's Preston, who at the time were looking like they were up the top. It doesn't matter whether it's Stoke. We play the same way. It's just this patient, relentless builder. We never seem to get out of second gear because we don't seem to have to, because we just pass it around and eventually score a goal. I mean, to the extent that both our opening goals against Preston, the one against Preston that KDH scored was like created in a through ball. Admittedly, the Preston defender got a nick on it, but buried in the far corner. Iheanacho's opener against Stoke, almost a carbon copy. Passing around them again, played it through, beautiful ball, another great goal. My only issue, really, and I'm just like hopping away from the Preston one against Stoke, was I almost got the impression that when we scored, the team thought, yep, job done. We've scored a goal. We've won the game. And there was just a little bit of time where I think they just lost a little bit of concentration. But once they got that back, then it was just, yet again, another stroll in the park, which could easily have been three or four, much like the Preston game ended up being. You know, once we've got that opening goal, it was only ever really going to be Leicester scoring again, and we did. And you can almost see the heads dropping of the other teams, knowing that they've, you know, their game plan, which is fundamentally to try and contain and hopefully sneak a goal and be fortunate enough to get a point against us, they know that that's gone. And it's like, yeah, they've just kind of accept that they're getting beaten by a better side. Although apparently the Stoke manager thought they had some opportunities and were competitive, which I'm not entirely sure we thought, all their fans, who after about 70 minutes were cheering that they'd got the ball. So I just think it just feels a little bit like we're a machine. I can understand why teams looking in, watching us, might, you know, if they're just catching glimpses of games, might think, oh, these lot aren't. I think these are absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's not like we're playing absolutely like scintillating, quick football. It's just relentlessly good. And you have to watch it a lot to appreciate, I think, how good we're getting.
And you mentioned Alex Neil, who wisely swapped what are currently fourth place Sunderland for fourth bottom Stoke. Not the greatest career move, Alex, I would suggest in hindsight. Killer, I'm going to say this. I think it's done. I think that this was the big week in my mind, and we've come through with flying colours. I mean, I'm looking at the league table. Preston, who've in fairness completely forgotten how to win, are still incredibly in third place. We're 10 points clear of third, which is Preston. We've got a goal difference to put the domination into perspective. We've got a goal difference of 17. The third place team, Preston, have got a goal difference of -2, believe it or not. So, you know, you could almost add another point on. We're effectively 11 points clear. It just seems to me, you know, if you just think about that logically, teams like Sunderland and Leeds are going to have to win four straight games while we lose four straight games just to get in front of us. Yeah. I mean, that to me seems utterly impossible. You know, leaving aside the way we've played and the way that they're playing, and you know, they're good sides. They're playing like normal championship teams. You know, win three, draw one, lose one, win three, draw one. That will get you into a good place. We're not like that, aren't we? I'm sure we're promoted as of this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I obviously wouldn't be blasé about it, and I'm sure you're not either. You're being speculative, and I think you're entitled to do so. I think, and again, we were talking about this whilst drinking Trompwell's IPA after the game, about how Enzo's getting a tune out of players that Brendan Rodgers appeared to completely unable to do, which I think ultimately here is the key. The key is, and I know it's a different league, I get that, but he is getting a tune out of players and they're playing up to Premier League standard in a league which is anything but. So it does look a lot like that. I suppose if you were going to sit down and do one of these business risk analysis, and I'm sure you've been party to these before, Tim, you would put probably as the only number one risk would be Enzo leaves Leicester, joins a Prem club.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that is a very good point, and that's not impossible, is it? But I still wonder whether he's not quite done enough to even be considered. But I suppose it is possible. To be honest with you, though, I don't know. What do you think, Norm? I think if that happened, I think our players are still so far ahead of everything else we've seen so far in this league, with possible exception of Ipswich. I know you're not quite with me on this, but I've seen some of that. They look super impressive, whether they've got the squad or not, I don't know. But even if Enzo left, and understanding that means Enzo Ball would go out the window as well, I think we'd probably have enough, Norm, don't you?
I think we probably would, but I don't even want to go down the road of Enzo leaving. I mean, he's joined Leicester. He's doing really well here. A Premier League team, he's not going to go to a top six team. He's certainly not at that level. He's probably not even going to go to a top half team. So the only teams that may be interested in him at this moment in time would be a team that's struggling to stay in the Premier League. And we all know, look, I don't want to be overconfident, but I am going to be. We all know that we are a Premier League team in all but status at the moment. And we will be in the Premier League next year. And so, therefore, so will Enzo. And I think he's created such a great feel-good factor around the place, from what I can understand, and you know, how the players appear to be, and the fact that he is getting tunes out of other players. I can't imagine him wanting to leave. I would imagine he's looking at this as actually, Leicester is still, you know, I've got Leicester at a really good time. They're in the Championship. I'm going to take them back up. And I've got a decent project here to see them try and kick on and perhaps start looking at, you know, how we used to be. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but, you know, like Brighton have done a Leicester, you know, Villa are doing well again, West Ham. These are all teams that we can be at the same level at. I'm not suggesting that we're going to be the challenging for Champions League necessarily again at all, but, you know, we're a really, really good project for Enzo. Just before we talk about anything else, I do want to demonstrate utter confidence in us at the moment. I'm sure you're aware that the record number of points in the Championship is held by Reading, and that is 106. Now, for us to only equal that record, we need to drop 29 more points over the course of the season. And doing some very simple maths, I've not sort of worked out loads of different scenarios, but one is if we lose five more games and we draw seven games, so that's basically not winning 12 of our remaining 36 games, then we still end up on 106 points. Now, what's the likelihood of us not winning one in three games, which basically that works out at? Before you answer, boys, I'll tell you, it's zero. It's zero.
Statistically, it's zero.
Well, actually, the funny thing about it is, and we were me and Noor, who obviously spent most of the game cuddling up and talking and stuff, but actually, we've all at times scratched our heads, haven't we, about Enzo's team selection. Why go to Norwich? Why make 7 changes? Why make 6 changes? 5 changes? Blah, 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 blah. But actually, what he's actually done brilliantly is he's now made us injury-proof. Mm. So you know, again, we were talking about risk and we were talking about X, Y, Z. If he had just gone with the same team all the while, well, of course, let's be honest, you know, when you run your finger through that list, we know full well that Wilfred Ndidi, prone to injuries, Ricardo Pereira, I mean, he's prone to have whole seasons out when he doesn't quite fancy it, et cetera, et cetera. But what Enzo's done brilliantly is it wouldn't actually matter. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to see those players get injured. I don't want to see those players not available. But he's made us injury-proof. He's got to the point now where the whole team is singing from his hymn sheet. They know exactly what's required of them. And now he can just turn around pretty much now within about 20 players and go, oh, by the way, player number 20, you're now back in. You're doing a job. This wouldn't bother him. And it wouldn't bother him at all.
Couldn't agree more. I think the only player, I think it's Hermansson and Winks are the only ever presence, aren't they, in our championship team? They've started every game. But
I was going to ask you both. So go on then, Noam. You answer this first thing, because just off the back of what Killers said, I was going to ask you both. Because I've been factoring that into that. That's why I'm saying I'm certain now we're going to go up. Because I just, like, to your point on the risk analysis, Killer, I really think we've got all bases. I think even Enzo leaving, I still think we'd probably be okay. That's a big risk. But that's one of the main reasons. It's the squad depth and why I would have, you know, I think Ipswich are doing incredibly well, by the way, at this stage in the season. Most people would be saying, you know, I mean, Norm could be giving virtually those same stats for Ipswich. It's only 2 points behind us. But we don't know about their squad. But we do know about our squad. Who's now our most important player then, Norm? If there was one player you wouldn't want to get injured?
Yannick Vestergaard. Oh my God. No. And
stick with that. Why spoil it? That was going so well.
But joking aside, I know it's the championship. He's been a revelation this season. He's been superb. So. But clearly, you know, we've got so many defenders that we can cope without him. I suppose the single one that I can, it's probably between Winks. I wouldn't want to lose Winks and I wouldn't want to lose Vardy. But I think
I was going to say Vardy. I think Winks has maybe been our best player, and Vardy's obviously not played as much as him. But I just because it's the area we've got the least cover, isn't it, Killer? What would your view be on that?
I know I'm absolutely 100% Harry Winks. I think he's the guy that brings it all together, makes it all stick. Yeah. I'm not saying he's replaceable, but I think there's a good reason. And Enzo's one of these guys. He's proving himself to be very, very shrewd. And if you think about it, why would he in an environment where he's making so many changes? Why would he only have one constant outfield player? And the reason for that, of course, is because I do think he knows that he is the glue that sticks it all together. He's been absolutely brilliant. Oh, by the way, it'd be interesting to look at the stats if Vestergaard hadn't been suspended, because, you know, the guy doesn't put a foot wrong anymore, does he?
No, we don't have to defend, do we? And this is why we're getting away with it. This is why we're going to get away with Justin, and Chowdhury, who have struggled. You know, Chowdhury struggled a bit against Stoke at left back. Justin struggled a bit against Preston, but that's why it's not a problem, because we don't. You know, it doesn't happen enough. It's for it to be a concern. You know, we can allow those players to. I mean, I think Justin will come good again, and I'm sure Chowdhury will do fine. It's just they just didn't quite look on the ball, so to speak. So. But aside from that, you know, like you said about Vestergaard, we're just not the positional, how we're playing at the positional sense of the defenders. It's just not, we're not going to get caught on the break very often. So he's just not going to be exposed for where he is a problem, which is like we've discussed, he can't turn very quickly.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have. You know, again, what a transformation. I don't think we're going to have any problem with him until next year. And then I think we might have well have the problems with him that we had last year. But you know, that's for to worry about much further down the line. On the subject of defenders, though, what about Cody Killer? So Cody comes back in for Vestergaard, and then drops back out in the next game.
Yeah, I was absolutely certain Vestergaard would start. I'm absolutely certain that he is Enzo's number one guy simply because of his ball playing ability. But you get the feeling that they're all going to get game time, don't you? Cody was the one at the beginning of the season, even with Faz, that you would have thought to yourself, Cody probably going to be slotted in as number one defender. I don't know who the number one defender is for sure. I know who's number four for sure in that centre back. That is Suter, and there's no doubt they're Enzo's spot on with Suter, and I even watched him warm me up with the other guys. He just isn't as good as footballer, I'm afraid. He just technically is nowhere near as good as the rest of them. So really, I think he's got three main centre-backs, and he's got like Suter, who will be his number four. Of those three, you know, let's be honest. I mean, you wouldn't be bothered about any two, the combo of any two, would you?
No, but I did think it was a particularly nice touch for him to play Suter against Stoke, by the way. It's, you know, potentially really good man management again, but it shows the comfort he's working within, doesn't it, if he can do absolutely that? Because I think you're right, you know, rightly or wrongly, Suter's right at the back of that queue, and he still plays him in that particular game, which I thought was lovely.
I mean, with regards to the number of changes he keeps making, obviously the Preston game, he only made that one enforced change, which was unusual, and maybe that's showing Preston a bit of respect. I still like a consistent team in many ways, but what he is showing is that he can then go and make six changes for the Stoke game and we're still consistent because all the players are fitting in so beautifully in the positions that, you know, I just can't imagine, you know, the fact we're in this position where we are able to in a season where we tried to get back up to the Premier League, where every week we can change half the team and still win and still look significantly better. It's just absolutely phenomenal to be in that position. It really is.
It is. I've got a question for you two guys then, because this came up in the pub. It'd be very interesting to know what you think. So we now know that within the formation that he's playing, that he can pretty much play anybody out of the squad, comes in, does a job, we get a result. Okay, so let's flip this round. What about if he changed the formation? Is that going to tinker with things? Or are we that good that it wouldn't make any difference, Tim?
Well, is this the point you were talking about getting Iheanacho into the team alongside Vardy? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, it is really. And not just that. I just think at the minute, for me, I don't want to be too critical, but I looked on Saturday, and I didn't think either of the wingers played particularly well, in truth. I just don't think they ever really hurt Stoke. And of course, what's happened is, again, if you think about it in terms of Moneyball, if you just looked at stats, you go, well, hang on a minute. You've got Iheanacho starts, scores, comes off, replaced by Vardy, scores. And actually, there's a bit of pattern emerging that your two guys are now scoring every time they play, but they are never on the pitch at the same time. Therefore, Moneyball, would you actually suggest that they both played and then maybe you change the lineup full stop? My question to you is, if we change the formation and play them both, but what I'm also saying is we could change it to anything. It could go 3-5-2, 4-4-2, whatever. Is the squad good enough to be able to cope with a change of formation, or is it the formation that needs to stay constant, Tim?
I think it's the formation. I think the way he's playing with the passing, the wingers are integral to this because Tim's alluded to this in the other podcast. The wingers are very, very wide. And I think it's all about keeping as wide a space and as many players as possible to pass the ball to, stretching the opposition from one side of the pitch to the other, which is what ultimately leads to us being able to create space in the middle for the intricate passing to then go on and score. So I think there's an argument to say that we have got the players to play a 4-4-2, for instance. I've got no doubt about that. But in the possession game, does that mean that we're slightly more narrow potentially than we are when we're playing these two wingers? So
that's an excellent point. I suppose the only thing is if we take Tim's theory that it's a foregone conclusion we're going to get promoted, we can't play that formation at the Etihad, can we? And Anfield and the Emirates. We're going to get absolutely battered.
I'd go a bit further than that, Killer. I'm not sure we can play in this way, regardless of formation, at those places you've just mentioned.
Yeah, but I'm with Norm in this one. I think the way that we play is absolutely conducive to that formation. I think Norm's spot on. It's about using every grain, every bit of sand, every
blade
bit of
grass,
blade of grass, yeah, grain of grass. Yeah, but I think Norm's right. You stretch it out, you play with width, you absolutely rag your opponents. And you do that playing that way. Now, if he goes 4-4-2, he will concede possession, won't he? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt on that. It's just whether or not actually we're still potent as a football team. I don't know. Go on, you carry on, Tim.
I was just going to say, it'll actually be very interesting as the season goes on. If we continue this form, and we're going to lose some games, we know that. But it seems to me that we're a team. It feels to me like a Premier League side playing in the FA Cup against Championship opposition. You know you're going to trip up once every 6 or 7 years. And get knocked out by a Championship side, but probably no more often than that.
Yeah,
that's why I'm really very confident. I'm not going to say we're going to win the league yet, by the way, but I'm just so confident we're going to finish top two. But what would be interesting, Killer, if we do get much further ahead, let's say we get 20 points clear, way before, you know, way ahead of when Burnley did it, 25 points clear. I mean, you know, this is starting to look like that may be a possibility at some point. Will he then have an eye on next season and on those games that you've mentioned to say, look, you know, that is going to be a risk. Do I want Vestergaard playing it around his 6-yard box against Premier League quality strikers? Don't know if I do. Am I going to try not only some different formations, but also some different styles of play in preparation for the Premier League?
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting. Or is Enzo one of these guys, Norm, that's just going to turn around and say, no, this is the way we play. If we get beat 6-0, we'll get beat 6-0. Because actually, if you look at the Premier League, we know full well that it's a league within a league, isn't it? There is an argument to say, even with Brendan Rodgers, we had loads of, in his last couple of seasons, we had loads of bad luck stories, didn't we? At home to Man City, we get popped by the odd goal, but we'd play ever so well. Yeah. 0 points, 0 points, Man United, 0 points, et cetera, et cetera. There is an argument to say, well, so what if you get beaten by the top six? So what if to do you 4 or 5-0? Actually, you stick to a philosophy of football, and when you play Crystal Palace, and when you play the Burnleys and the promoted teams, the Bournemouths, the Wolves and stuff, give them a game.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other thing here is, of course, we're not going to get promoted to the Premier League without strengthening significantly. I think that, you know, so we're going to have better players than we do now. So with that in mind, I don't think we can think too far ahead. And I honestly, I'm not at all convinced that practicing different formations because we're 25 points clear and promoted in the Championship is going to have any bearing whatsoever on how well we would do in the Premier League, when half the players would be out of contract, some would have left, we'd have new signings, it will just be completely, completely different and utterly pointless. I don't think that will happen. I just think he'll play his way, the Enzo way, as the playing the Enzo way, as the song says, and I think he'll stick with that, and if until the point he feels that he needs to alter something, which I just simply don't think he will.
No, I mean, look, if we're going to talk about any negatives or risks, I think in a sense, Norm, for me, that is the only risk, because against those top sort of sides, this is going to be an entirely different ball game. You know, if you try and play against Spurs, for example, the way they're playing and play like this, I think we could be on the end of some of the hidings that Burnley have had playing in this way this season. We mentioned this last week, didn't we? Yeah. But the flip side of that, Killer, you know, I'm the Premier League table. You mentioned Palace; they're actually ninth in the Premier League. You know, the top eight. There's some decent sides there. below them, you know, Crystal Palace are ninth. You know, they're really no, you know, I think we've said that for me, this is the weakest the Premier League there has ever been. That kind of sums it up. The only teams of any stature at all below them are Manchester United and Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I think this team that we've got would be comfortably mid-table.
Yeah, yeah. I think. Well, look. I don't think we've been in any trouble at all. We know that for sure. I mean, it's interesting if you look at Luton. They obviously play quite a muscular style of football. It's more physical, and obviously they're not doing particularly well. But they're not getting dicked either. Have you noticed? It's just the odd goal here.
They're fourth bottom actually.
Well, which obviously would be absolutely fine. Come what may. You take Burnley though, who obviously are probably much more aligned to the Enzo style of football. And I just wonder, it's getting a bit horrible. They've won one game, which was away to Luton. You could argue that was a championship fixture, really, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Apart from that, Spurs have popped them off at home quite badly. An underwhelming Chelsea team have managed to score four at Turf Moor. That's the worry. I know it's different from our point of view, but that is the worry. Unless you do the business in the summer, unless you get those three or four quality players in, you do, whichever way you spin it, run the risk of playing this sort of football and getting absolutely, absolutely popped off. Because make no mistake about it, Burnley had a fantastic season last season. I think if you take away Burnley's the first quarter of the season, where Vincent Kompany, if he was on the show, would say, well, yeah, we're a team in transition. They made about 15 first-team changes, etc., etc. Once they clicked, I think there's a lot of parallels between us and Burnley in terms of the way we're playing and our superiority. The slight worry, and it has to be a worry, it has to be a risk, and let's not be arrogant about it, is we could go up. No doubt about it, we could go up and get absolutely mullered if we're not careful.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean Vestergaard's the sort of the icon really for me for this conversation, because I can't really make an argument against you guys that he's not been excellent. But as Norm said in this show, he never has to defend. And generally, defenders have to defend. And certainly, if a club is operating in the league that it should be operating in, which for us, let's be honest, is the Premier League, then he will have to do some defending. And, you know, that he'd be a great example, because there is an argument to say he's been our best player this season. I can't believe these words are dripping out of my mouth. But, you know, that he's going to be nowhere near our best player if we get promoted next year, if he even plays.
Hmm.
So that'll be interesting. Change the subject. John Rudkin and Susan Whelan, Norm, do they deserve some credit? We gave them a lot of stick last year.
No, I'm not going to jump on the they deserve a lot of credit. I don't think they deserve any credit. I mean, I think you could argue that they've fallen on their feet rather fortuitously with Enzo.
Susan Whelan would say she appointed him.
Yeah, of course they appointed him. They've made, if you look at our managers, they've made enough mistakes with our managers to suggest that there's an element of hit and miss on who they select, and occasionally they've got like lucky. So I'm sure they've done their due diligence on him, and that there's reasons why they selected him. But I would imagine he was a fairly cheap option. It was a complete change of styles and something that they thought we ought to give it a go, because frankly, with Rodgers is gone, Dean Smith has failed. You know, who else of the traditional boys do we think can really kick us on? So I suppose they ought to be given credit for being brave enough not to just go for someone of the north. You know, well, I'll say that they obviously went for Graham Potter, but so I suppose an element of credit, but very, very limited, because I think they still need to, you know, hold their hands up and say we've made a lot of mistakes. If they learn from them, fair enough, but you know, I don't know about you. I'd be happy if particularly Rudkin wasn't in charge of selecting players. Let's just hope that Enzo is more in control of the kind of players that he wants. But no, I'm not giving them credit, Tim. Sorry.
No, I'm with Norm Killer on that, but only because I think when you've made the number of mistakes, particularly that Rudkin has, but I think Susan Whelan, yeah, we can't change what we were saying all of last season. I'm shocked, you know, again, some of the businesses those guys have worked in over the years, you know, big businesses that wouldn't have accepted that level of underperformance over that period of time, however good you'd been before. So I'm with Norm that you know, they shouldn't necessarily be in those seats. But Norm's mentioned Enzo. They did appoint him. What about the players? Have they not brought in some good players this summer as well?
I'll just go back a step on that. Look, we lost a lot of criticism at Susan Whelan and John Rook, and it was absolutely founded. The level of incompetence there last season was just next level, right all the way through. Not getting rid of Rodgers when they should have got rid of him, and then bringing in Dean Smith. You want to know how great a manager Dean Smith is? Where's he working now in Britain? It's one of those, isn't it? The whole thing, top to bottom, was a shambles. Now, the Enzo thing, whichever way you spin it, was a gamble. The reason Leicester fans were optimistic, I think predominantly because we're all secretly pretty relieved that Gerrard or Lampard didn't get the job.
Absolutely.
You know, there was an element of that. There was an element of anybody that's been in the Pep stable, well, presumably he's going to be half decent. But it was a gamble. And I'll give you one name if you want to know what a gamble it was. Brian Kidd. Yeah, and I remember when Blackburn appointed Brian Kidd, Fergie's number two. This guy's going to have learned from the master, blah, blah, blah. 6 months later, they get relegated, he's sacked. Okay, It's not a foregone conclusion. So, yeah, credit has to be given there. I think the transfer activity was great. But, I mean, we've laughed about it, Tim, haven't we? Because the players we've signed, two of them, were all the guys we were talking about last year. And again, You end up thinking to yourself, don't you? How easy would it have been to have kept Leicester? In fact, the funny thing about it is, I suspect if we'd bought Winks and Cody and we've got a new goalkeeper, that we would have never, ever had a discussion about relegation, ever.
No, well, there were 10, Norm and I did a show, didn't we, end of last season, 10 different ways we could have stayed up, to do with signings, with not letting people go, with being a bit bolder in different areas of the business, including the boardroom. But well, let me go a bit further though, Norm. Have we made one bad signing this summer?
That's a nice negative question. So,
I mean, Cassidy, maybe.
Well, yeah. So thanks for putting words in my mouth.
He's on loan. He's not even a sign.
Exactly. Yeah,
but yeah. I suppose he. Look, I'm not. I don't know whether we've made any bad signings. I think that Cassidy. Yeah, I think Cassidy is the one that I'm most disappointed with. You know, at the beginning of the season, after he scored against Cardiff, I think it was. I felt that. You know, I was really quite excited. You know, couldn't believe he wasn't starting, and indeed he was. I'm now very much at the point where I'm a bit disappointed when I see him in the side, because I don't think he's very quick. I don't think he's suited to Championship football from what I've seen, and I think he's a bit of a weak link in the team. So, whilst I'm not saying he's a bad signing, because he might improve, at the moment he's not what I hoped he would be.
Yeah, you go along with that, Kilo.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with him, Tim, for sure. And like you say, a guy that everybody sort of says, technically, this guy is absolutely brilliant, and he's played for the Italian under-21 team. He looks lost, doesn't he? He really, and to almost to the point where you think, I'm pretty certain we've got a better younger midfielders in our academy and in our under-21 setup than him. He has been a disappointment, but again, on the plus side. You know, Dennis Pratt, when he comes back, it may well be that young Cassidy's not going to get much of a look in. One thing's for certain, he's been given the opportunities. And I said, again, as part of the millions of conversations Norm and I had on Saturday, one of them was, we both agreed, this was a really big game for him on Saturday. And I'm afraid he just didn't take it at all. He was poor. And by the time his number went up, I'm afraid he looked like a... pretty much like a forlorn character trotting off that pitch.
Yeah, I hope he can get his confidence back. Like we said, there's no risk as a player on loan, but you know, his pedigree looked really, really excellent. So maybe there is a confidence thing with him. I just want to ask you about something completely different. Before I do that, no show next week, folks. Got another interminable international break which would decide absolutely nothing, because every team in the world qualifies for absolutely everything. And on that note, Norm, what a shambles FIFA announcing plans, well, pretty much announcing plans for the next two World Cups. Do you see those?
Are they the ones where it's, we're talking about the fact that it's looking almost guaranteed it's going to Saudi Arabia in,
yeah,
so like that's 2034.
Yeah, and then there's about 28 continents.
Oh, the one where, oh yeah, yeah. The 100th anniversary one where, you know, we're going to be flying around the entire world with something like 25% of the teams pre-qualified because, yeah, like the ball touches their border halfway. Yeah, it's just a joke. I mean, FIFA are just an absolute.
And isn't it funny though, Norm, but in this environment where everybody's PC and everything needs to be sustainable and stuff, actually there's going to be about 20 million air miles used.
Yeah.
Massive hole in the ozone, etc., etc. What on earth were they thinking of?
No, and just to be parochial as well, and I know we've got listeners all over the world, so, you know, allow us a minute of being little Englanders. You know, at least 12 more years before England could possibly even get a sniff of hosting it. You know, there's just no major country not had it, is the killer? You know, everyone, USA have had it twice. Every single country has had it since 66. There's any country of substance, plus Qatar. And oh, by the way, it's 8 years since we've had it in the Middle East, so we better have it in Saudi Arabia, the one after that.
Yeah, I thought we were really lucky even getting a second nibble at the Euros and having games, as many games as we did with the Euros. Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, it's all about these emerging countries. Now they've gone back to making it nostalgic and there's a bit of a South American feel. I just shake my head. What I really don't like about it is what I've always enjoyed about a World Cup is if you drop it into a country, I love watching and seeing how that country embraces it. Yep. You know, and I know a good friend of mine, he's been to all the England World Cups since 1990. And it's the thing that he's loved the most. It's that whole fever that you get within a nation. They completely embrace it. The only thing I really had in my lifetime that encapsulated that was when we had the 2012 Olympics. I mean, anybody was down in London at that time. It was absolutely brilliant. Why would you want to dilute that? And actually, so nobody gets to enjoy that, really. I don't get it at all.
No, I think it's a massive show. I was lucky enough. I went over to the World Cup when it was in Japan, and you know what you've said was exactly what it was. I mean, the locals there embraced the England team. In return, the England fans, you know, all became Japan fans as their second team while they were there. The atmosphere in the evenings was absolutely brilliant. It was a great advert for football as a world game, and FIFA have just completely lost sight of that. By the way, the UK and Ireland are then going to be allowed to get Euro 28 unopposed, but it's a different decision-making body. And what I just can't believe now is that they're not even dressing up charades of voting behind closed doors and all of this. They're just saying, we're not even going to go down that road. We're just going to give it to these guys. And by the way, we're going to do the one after that in Saudi Arabia as well. I wonder why that would be. It is absolutely shameless. It really is. And it's a shame because in Leicester, if there's a World Cup, we'd have a real good fighting chance of getting some games at the King Power. And, you know, it just doesn't seem that that's going to happen, does it? But there we go. Let's, one of the things I wanted to just touch on before we come on to the predictor and Swansea and whatnot. Leicester City women top of the league, Norm. 2 out of 2.
Absolutely unstoppable. Just like the men's and women's flying. What a change round from last season. I mean, they played 2, won 2. I mean, it was nice for Everton to miss the penalty to allow us to then go on and score and win the game. But I did read a report on it, and they actually it was very nice because it was suggesting that Leicester perhaps ought to be thinking a little higher than just trying to avoid relegation this season. You know, I think they've made some good signings, and obviously Willie Kirk has kind of transformed the team and its fortunes. And it, again, I think it just goes to show what a bit of confidence does, and it's just looking like they're playing as a team now, and it's just great. It's great to see. It's just great for our. I think it was 97. We were the sporting capital, if you remember, the cricket, the basketball, the football. Just, you know, it just feels like we're getting a bit of that feel good factor, and with the local sport again. So it's magic.
It's always funny. The top seven in the Women's Super League, Spurs going upwards. Spurs, Chelsea, Man U, Man City, Liverpool, heard it all before. Oh, top of the pile, Leicester City. Fantastic. Great start to the season. As I mentioned, no show next week. So if you do want to email us, it's leicestercitypubcast@gmail.com. We'll keep your email confidential. Stick your name on it if you want to. Don't. If you don't want to, we'd love to hear from you. Let's come on to the predictor table with Trentwell's IPA. Two double game week. And again, we have another sensational prediction in from Norm. Correctly predicted, Leicester City 3, Preston 0. So well done, Norm.
Thank you very much.
Stretching away now, the rest of Killer and I predicted those results the right way, but with the wrong scores, and we all did that with Stoke. It's getting quite easy. If you realise, Killer, when we have a winning season, Norm wins the predictor, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That just happens. So you and I are stuck on 11. Norm with a handy little points gap to 14 now, so that's all good. So when we ever do get the football back, it's going to be Swansea, Killer.
Yeah, Swansea, you quite like that as a fixture, don't you? I just wonder what they're going to make of it all, thinking, oh, hang on a minute. So this Leicester City team, if you try and play football, if you don't play football against them, you lose, but you might keep it down to 1-0, 2-0. If you try and play football against you, get absolutely dicked. What should we do?
Probably focus on the following match. He's probably not even thinking about our game, are they? Think about a game in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, in fact, we'll rest the first team. Just do your best, lads. Keep it under five.
But you know what? In a normal season, we wouldn't be being this cocky, would we? But it just has got the writing on the wall. Is there anything? I mean, look, we've got to go to their places. They're in a bit of form. I'm searching. They're in a bit of form.
Yeah, so were Norwich. So were Norwich, by the way. So we went there and didn't give them a kick for 90 minutes. Look, of course, we've been around football long enough to know that things can suddenly turn. I mean, you know, we all remember famously that Newcastle season where it looks like it was done and dusted by Christmas, and you know, Newcastle were booking the street parade, weren't they, with the Kevin Keegan open top bus, and they managed to blow it. It seems unlikely, but it always seems unlikely when you're winning. And I've said this many times before, when you're winning football matches, it's difficult to think what it's like to lose. And if you lose football matches, it's difficult to what it's like to think when you win. We don't know. And of course, it could turn at any time. But because of the way this club's being well managed by a guy that's got so many irons in the fire in terms of players, it looks really unlikely we're going to do anything other than win.
Well then, Killer, on that note,
every week,
what is your prediction?
I'm going to go for... Well, there'll probably be a Leicester... I mean, obviously, the opposition only score if it's either a world-class goal or we give them a goal. Have you noticed that? There's no sort of standard... I think there's only been a standard goal against Coventry. So I'm going to go for another cock-up somewhere down the line. It's going to be Swansea City 1, Leicester City 5.
5-1. Ooh, brilliant. That's wonderful to hear such positive predictions.
Norm, I'm going to go 3-0, Norm. What about you?
I'm going to suggest that Swansea will get a late consolation, and I'm going to go for 4-1.
4-1. God, we are getting cocky, aren't we?
Robert Riley.
3-0, 1-5, 1-4. When has that ever been done on an away game?
it's right we should be cocky. You know, every single game this season, I think we're better than every team in the division, and every game we should win. We won't win them all, but we should. Of course we're cocky.
It is in danger of getting boring, but in an absolutely beautiful way. Killer, what about some final thoughts?
Best ever start to the championship. It's absolutely incredible. And of course, this is a Leicester City team that we do hold some fantastic records. 5,000-1 winners of the Premier League, best ever away victory. Now we've got the best ever start to the championship. Come on, this isn't an enormous football club, but it's a football club that are making records in our lifetime. And I'm really pleased to be part of it.
Great stuff, Norm.
We're coming for you. We're coming for you. Reading's 106-point record. We're coming for you.
That's all, folks. We're all off to buy an abacus to try and keep up with this fantastic Leicester City side. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the Leicester City Pubcast, please subscribe and tell everyone about it. If you hated the Leicester City Pubcast, please keep it to yourselves. See you next week.